Beyond Athletic, episode 21.
I'm certainly the most grateful for her motivating me to do something besides, you know, to look beyond my college volleyball career.
Gumbo! You might be smarter, your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are beyond athletic. What is up, Beyond Athletic Nation? I am very happy to bring the first game plan session. This is going to be where I bring on experts in tons of different fields. It could be coaches of different sports, but they're all coaches in some area of life. And that could be fitness, health, nutrition, education, finances, entrepreneurship, memory, language, whatever we can improve in. I'm going to bring those types of people on so that we can do that and we can learn from the best. And today, we've got an excellent guest on. It's Jeremy Hoff. Full disclosure, this guy is like a brother to me. And there's no lie when I consider him a real brother and real blood, because he is my best friend in the world. And he is the best example of what it means to be a man and a father. And I'm just so proud and so grateful that he took the time to do this show with us, because we've been trying for a long time. And just to tell you guys about what we're going to get into on this episode is we go over so much. So don't hate me, but you know, it's my bro. I couldn't stop talking because he is a wealth of knowledge. He studies so hard to stay up to date on all the new things that will actually help and stay away from the pharmaceuticals and the crap that just hurt our bodies and hurt the environment. So tons of info in this one. We talk about not over specializing in one sport, how finding other sports to cross-train in and enjoy can actually bring down the rate of injuries, and it can actually benefit your primary sport. And we get into the best traits for athletes to stay healthy and be the best that they can be. We talk about also the common injuries in a lot of different sports, so you can be aware of those and look out for it. But at the end, we also talk about nutrition. And we get into paleo diet and what that all means, and why this whole carb thing versus, you know, the new paleo and fat and protein, et cetera, what it all means. And we talk about medicine versus pharmaceuticals. So tons of stuff in here. I hope you guys are really going to love it. I'm sorry that it went so long, but you're going to get so much information for this. In the future, expert game plan sessions are going to be about 30 to 40 minutes. So if you do like this one though, tweet me, Ryan J. Owens, RyanJayOwens, and just let me know what you thought, what you liked, what could change, etc., etc. I'll love you for it. I'll retweet it to everybody. And today I do want to talk about one person who left a 5-star review, because I figured out how to see the international reviews. So I give a big shout out to the head coach of the Hellas, which is the Greek beach volleyball national team, Kostas Taborazis. And this is actually my former libero in Greece on one of my teams. And he gives it 5 stars on November 29th and says, "That's an excellent podcast. I recommend it to every young athlete, and it's a really useful for parents and whoever is related to sports or education. Well done, RJO." Thank you, Kostas. "Keep putting the high level. Beyond Athletic is highly recommended." So thank you so much for that. And anybody else who leaves a review, you're going to help the show be ranked higher and show up higher in the search results. And what this means is it's not just, oh, I'm doing such a great job. No, it's more about people finding this show. And if we can help more people find this show, and you guys can, you can give a bad review. It does not matter. It's gonna help me improve it for everyone. So anybody doing that, I'll definitely highlight you on here. And anything that is talking about how I can improve it, I'm definitely gonna make sure that I implement those things. So without any further ado, I give you Jeremy Hoff in the first game plan session.
Hey athletes, far and wide, Ryan J. Owens here. Grab a pen and paper. Today's a special game plan session where athletes learn to go above and beyond. Today's featured guest is Jeremy J. Hoff. Jeremy, are you ready to game plan?
Absolutely.
Well, Jeremy was attending one of the biggest North Shore high schools in Illinois. This is a suburb north of Chicago, the first suburb. We went to high school together, full disclosure. He attended men's college at Rutgers University, where he met his wife. He was named 2002 Male Athlete of the Year and has been inducted not only into our high school's Hall of Fame, but also Rutgers. He holds the records in all stats except assists and kills. He went to medical school after, and now he's in physical medicine and rehab, pain, sports medicine, doctor kind of thing. And your interests are in nutrition, exercise, psychology, and coaching. Now, that's a bit about your accomplishments. Why don't you take a moment to share a bit more about you personally and expand upon your profession?
Yeah, thanks. So I grew up in Chicago. First suburb north of Chicago. And as you well know, we grew up in the same area, same high school. And it's a very interesting kind of melting pot of an area where we're exposed to a lot of different cultures. And our high school was very mixed in terms of cultural diversity and kind of presented a lot of different opportunities, very, not politically speaking, but very liberal viewpoints and just a ton of opportunities there. I grew up with an older brother who fortunately took a lot of the negative attention of my parents off of me. And let me kind of grow up in my own way and nice and slowly and learn things for myself. I had a really good support system growing up through my mom and then my fake aunt. I have a number of fake family members, yourself included, who helped kind of shape me into the person I am today. I got great exposure. I got to travel to Hawaii for free and play out there against 6,000 under the eyes of 6,000 folks in their arena, which was just incredible. We got to play UCLA every year and travel to California a bunch of times, which was fascinating. That's how I ended up going to medical school in California.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about medical school. How was that transition? Like, what exactly field did you go into now?
I met my now wife out in Europe who'd been studying abroad for a semester. And we traveled out there and we were out there for 45 days backpacking. And when I was when on my way home, I'd been invited to go train with the national team. But I didn't know this at the time. I'd actually been invited to go train as a middle, and I'm an outside or an opposite. And, you know, I'd had to fill in a number of times for my team at middle because I'm not very tall, but I'm 6'6", almost 6'6". And so the national team coach had contacted me to go train with them. Well, I went on this backpacking trip and lost about 25 pounds because we were on a budget and came home and had to kind of call him and say, hey, I'm not really in any shape to go train with the national team. And it really changed where I thought I was headed, as did traveling through Europe. So when I got back, I realized, yes, volleyball would be fantastic and amazing, and everyone in the world wants the opportunity to be a professional athlete. But if I wanted to stay with my now wife, traveling to Europe and playing on a number of different teams and living as a professional athlete probably wasn't in the cards. And I had a great team physician at Rutgers who really encouraged me to go to medical school. Something I'd sort of been interested in, because I've always been interested in anatomy and interested in medicine, and, really pushed me to do it. And so I took a year off after college because I had not particularly prepared to go to medical school up until that point. And as most folks know, that try and do that in the beginning of college, it's almost a four-year process to have all the appropriate courses, to study the appropriate way, get the right grades, and then take the right examination. So I actually had to take a year off and work at a hospital for a year while I studied for the MCAT exams, the medical school entrance exam, and was lucky enough to get into medical school in a place I wanted to go. I wanted to go to Southern California. And so I ended up moving out there, going to medical school at an osteopathic medical school, which also was my decision, as it's a slightly different theory on health and disease than allopathic school. So an osteopathic school is a doctor of osteopathy, which is a DO. An allopathic school is a medical doctor, which is an MD. The main differences are that we learn a lot of physical manipulations, you know, sort of chiropractic, physical therapy, massage therapy, acupressure type things, in addition to all the normal coursework, pharmacology and biochemistry and all those anatomy and physiology courses. So I finished that up. I did a year of surgery in Roanoke. Medical school was fascinating. I got to play a ton of beach volleyball in medical school because we lived in Huntington Beach. And you got to come out and play with me a couple of times, which was awesome.
Yeah, I love it. That was my first taste of Cali with you. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we got to still one of the highlights of playing beach volleyball was playing with Butch May, who's Misty May's dad. And we used to play, you know, we had like a Thursday league, and, you know, one time Misty and Carrie didn't have anyone to train with. So me and a buddy from college, who were both pretty reasonably sized guys, went and trained with them. And they just were stunningly good. I mean, definitely not next level, but like 10 levels above where any other female volleyball players I'd ever seen were. I mean, so anyways, that was fascinating stuff. And as opposed to concentrating on medicine, I spent a lot of time at the beach.
Easy to get distracted in California.
Yeah. So it made my way back to the East Coast, where most of my family is and where my wife's family is. And went to a very competitive residency here for physical medicine, which was a big interest of mine because it's essentially rehabilitation from injuries. So whether it's a brain injury, a concussion, spinal cord injury, shoulder injury, sports medicine injury, something like that, or even, you know, somebody who has a heart attack, you know, they become so deconditioned that it requires a lot of rehabilitation. So that was a big interest of mine because I had seen the direction of surgery and where that was heading. And essentially, you know, the adage in surgery is if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so a lot of people were having surgery and having mediocre outcomes because they were begging surgeons to operate on them, whether or not they were truly appropriate for it. So one of my goals is to try and get to folks before they get to that point, because, you know, unfortunately, you can't really take back scar tissue once it's there. So now I spend most of my time really counseling and educating people on, you know, appropriate ways to treat their body. One of the osteopathic philosophies is how to find health, not just treat disease. Mm-hmm. And so I do a lot of educating about that. I'm pretty excited because I'm speaking at an anti-aging conference this summer about regenerative medicine and a few other topics that, you know, I've found to make a big difference for the right folks. And then I, you know, try and keep up on the latest and greatest all the time, because medicine's always coming out with great things, and the pharmaceutical companies are always coming out with heavily advertised things that we have to worry about too.
And I definitely, I want to get into that for sure. This, the great things that they're coming out with that the mainstream really, really misses, because the advertising for pharmaceuticals is just blown all of these other businesses out of the water with their budgets. So listen, before we get a little bit more into the things that would help people really stay healthy and stay on top of their game, whether they're an athlete or just anyone going through life, just to make sure, you know, you don't have any issues, you know, you're not walking around like, oh, I can't do this because of my back or et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
What do you see? And actually, before I get into that, I want to backtrack a little bit. Usually I like to have people tell a quote, something that fuels them in good times or in bad. Do you have something like that?
So I have a really interesting quote. So my first real volleyball coach, I had, you know, that we had a high school coach, and you didn't play freshman volleyball. I don't remember.
Just junior.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So our freshman year, we had a coach whose biggest thing was don't kick the volleyballs. But other than that, we didn't learn a whole lot. So my real first experience with a volleyball coach was Steve Wolf, who was about, you know, 5'5" and this real spitfire kind of guy, who developed quotes for us for our entire team. And the quote he gave me right before we went to the Junior Olympics was, and I'm paraphrasing because I haven't read it for a number of years. It's actually still on my wall somewhere at my mom's house. But the quote essentially was from Larry Bird, who's probably next to Michael Jordan, at least in my opinion, one of the best competitors that ever lived, or at least the most notable that ever lived. And essentially it was in the final seconds of the game, or at the end of the game, I want the ball in my hands, not in anyone else's hands, not in anyone else's hands in the world. And I didn't understand that really until after my college career, which was, you know, really tough. I've always had the mentality, trying to be as humble as possible and as supportive to teammates and everything else, which I really, really did strive to do. I've always tried to be a good person, and you know, that goes back to my mom and my aunt and my dad, you know, raising me to say, look, if you injure somebody, if you do something mean to somebody, you apologize. You know, try and be a humble person, try and be a nice person. But me always having the mindset, even as a freshman in college, against these guys that had been playing at a very high level for 2 or 3 years, that I could beat the guy across the net from me. And I guess I didn't really understand that until after college, that's kind of how I progressed as far as I did. And it was, you know, for the most part true. I think I was just willing to work harder or be more aggressive or have better fundamentals or whatever it was, but I could always beat the guy who was across the net from me. Or at least in my mind.
Yeah.
So that was a quote that, like I said, kind of came back to me after all of this stuff was done, that Steve, when I was a 15 or I guess 14 and a half year old kid, had figured this out about me, and gave me that quote. Because all the rest of the quotes were fairly inspirational quotes, like you're a nice guy and this and that and all this. And this one was like really, really aggressive, like, you know, really kind of a selfish quote. But that's something that, you know, it's not always about being the best in the world, but it's about being, you know, better than the guy next to you.
Yeah, I love this quote because, you know, and you paraphrased it, and I'm definitely going to find the exact one to put in the show notes. But yeah, at the end of the game, just to have that confidence, you know, and say, I want to control this because I'm so confident that I can get it done. And it's not that you're not confident that your teammates can't do it, because maybe in the split second you have that ball, but you're making the decision, this guy has a better shot, I'm going to give it to him, or whatever sport it is, you know. So
right, exactly.
Yeah, I love the tone that just sets to say, yeah, take full responsibility for yourself and make it happen. So telling, you know, everybody gets as far as they do in life, and you mentioned so far a lot of people who had in one way or another inspired you or drove you. Who is your biggest mentor so far in life?
Well, and you probably have a less involved experience, but Mike Hewlett is by far the biggest mentor probably most of us could ever have. Mike Hewlett was my high school volleyball coach until Chris took over, until Chris Levitino took over, but he was also my club team coach. And Mike Hewlett's a now quadruple amputee, but at the time that I started playing with him was a triple amputee. And you're like, how does a triple amputee coach volleyball or do anything? He was just a fantastic communicator. He also was the coach for the sitting Olympic volleyball team. Mm-hmm. And could find ways to motivate people. You know, now I deal with amputees and, you know, people who've coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan with limbs blown off and all these types of things. And I would say, like, you know, I hate to just throw lying statistics out there, but, you know, you're looking at 50 to 70% of those folks never reintegrate into society and never hold a job and all that kind of stuff. And Mike Hewlett was a executive for Walgreens and managed to coach, you know, full time, three different volleyball teams, a club team, a high school team, and the sitting Olympic volleyball team, and was more productive with no hands and one leg than most of us are, you know, with a normal body. So just whenever anything started to look difficult or get difficult in my own life, I could always look back to him and say, geez, this guy is doing absolutely amazing things with literally 1/4 the amount of limbs that I have, you know, so I should probably be able to step it up a little bit and, you know, and be better than what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing, Mike. I know him definitely. I mean, I got to know him just a little bit, which is right around the time that we first really got to know each other, which was through club volleyball at Adversity. Yep. And, I just remember when I finally got to Adversity, like I had to come on a scholarship and all that kind of stuff, whatever you want to call it. And I was just so happy because I remember you guys, you, Chris Barnes and Chris Levitino, who was my junior varsity coach, was just like, you got to go play club, period.
Yeah.
The best talents in all of the Chicagoland are there, and it's the only way to get better in the off season. And so I did it, and I just remember seeing Mike do his thing when I had only seen him before that at the high school just a little bit, but you guys usually train when we train, so we catch maybe a little bit before or after. Right. And when I noticed it, I mean, this guy really, I mean, he's walking around, he's only got, you know, a limited capability to move around, and yet he's teaching the best, some of the best athletes in America today were taught by Mike Hewlett. And that goes for the sitting volleyball team, the national Olympic team. So yeah, incredible guy. It doesn't make me wonder at all why he was a mentor of yours. Now listen, before we dive into the positive stuff, like those tools and tips we talked about, I want to go over what are some common injuries, some common mistakes you see people making?
So what I'm noticing that's actually incredibly frustrating, because you and I were just at the beginning of this world. But one of my favorite quotes from Tim Ferriss, to throw another person out there, is and he stole this from somebody else, obviously, but, you know, specialization is for insects. Like humans, we've been given so many incredible tools and advantages. And yet, you know, even this summer, I now have a 5-year-old boy, and one of our neighbors, his 5-year-old boy is already on a traveling soccer team. And they spend, I don't know, 3 nights a week and 1 day every weekend with this kid playing soccer. And, you know, I hate to be an old person, but when you and I were growing up, we got sent to the park to go play whatever sport was available, or, you know, we would sit around the house, or we would go meet friends and do anything. You know, there was no specific time to do this sport and specific way to do that or this. Or, you know, if I wanted to learn how to play basketball, I watched Michael Jordan on TV and then I went and tried to do what he was doing. You know, I mean, that's how we grew up. And yeah. Now having at the age of 5, 6, 7, 8, even at the age of 10 or 15, having somebody spend that much time on one sport, I'm seeing, because I do, I'm actually a director of the concussion clinics for our local high schools here. And so I see a lot of kids, and I see a lot of overuse injuries, of overtraining injuries, of over-specialization injuries. Far and away, the worst is gymnastics and pitchers in baseball. Just with shoulder injuries, elbow injuries. But you know, these are kids that play 9 to 10 months of the same sport every year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think had I done, I would have gone crazy, first of all. But, you know, I see kids that mimic myself, and yet I'm 15 or more years older than they are. Where they've got poor posture and, you know, their right shoulder is 2 inches lower than their left from playing an overhand sport too much, or from pitching with poor form, or, you know, not having the appropriate balance and muscle strength. And so they end up with this great promising high school career that ends when they're a junior because they've had so many injuries, and they never even have the opportunity to sit before some college coaches and potentially play in college. And, you know, it's very frustrating to me. And I also think it makes them much less complete athletes and less complete individuals, less well-rounded. So as far as that goes, it, you know, the injuries are generally sports specific. I see girls soccer being one of the worst sports that a woman can, or that a girl rather can play in terms of ACL injuries and MCL injuries. So knee injuries in general. And then the other is concussions. A lot of these women's soccer teams, when they play, you might have a club team where a 14-year-old is so good, she gets put on an 18-year-old league, and she's going against girls that are much more mature and physically developed, and she ends up with a bunch of concussions because of it, because she's just getting pushed around too much. And that ends her career at 16 instead of, had she stayed and played against and been the top against other 14-year-old girls, might have had a promising college career.
Yeah, actually, episode 10 of Beyond Athletic, we had Christina Lee on, who ran from New York to San Francisco. And that was exactly why she ended her soccer career, was because of 8 concussions, I think it was. And I guess this is something a lot of parents listening, or, you know, young athletes listening, I guess you just really have to be careful what you expose yourself to. And then if you do get injured, I mean, what do you see being the best things that parents and athletes can do when these things start, so that they don't have those reoccurring injuries?
Well, the biggest thing is to let your body do what it was designed to do. So my college career, my freshman year, unfortunately, we were actually making a really strong case for ourselves going to the Final Four. And at that point, I was actually starting as middle, which I was not designed to play. I'm actually a terrible middle blocker. And that actually, I really am. Comes down to fundamentals. I just have terrible footwork. And so I had to make up for that footwork by just working harder and trying to be more athletic than whoever I was going against. And because of doing that, I developed stress fractures in both of my shins, unfortunately. But I was allowed by my trainer and not, you know, Ron Larson didn't really have any knowledge of it, but I was allowed by my trainer to take, you know, very high doses of ibuprofen before every match so that I could play the match. Mm-hmm. And so letting your body, which you know, any of those anti-inflammatory medicines really inhibit the body's natural ability to heal itself. But not only that, they cover up pain that might be your body telling you you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. Yeah. And so I ended up, right as we're making this run, I ended up having to sit out close to the last month of our season, because my the team physician was like, no, you're done. You just can't. You have to let these heal. You have to give these, you know, 4 to 6 weeks to heal, because you are actually developing stress fractures and it could do permanent damage. So,
yeah.
So that would be one thing, is, you know, the game that you're playing in is not as important as you think it is. And that's something most athletes don't hear, and certainly most kids don't hear.
100%. The game that you're playing is not as important, right?
Yeah.
As
you think it is, you know. Yeah. That's in terms of, you know, if you're gonna. I dealt with a kid who had a number of shoulder injuries playing as a linebacker in football, and he had 3 or 4 college scholarships lined up, and his senior year decided, look, I'm not gonna go try and play in college. I've done too much damage to my body, but I want to play in our championship game. And I said, look, that's fine. You understand you might hurt yourself worse, but as long as this is it for you, then go ahead. Go, you know, you're going to play injured. You're going to play taped up. Go out and play and do your thing. Hopefully you don't get hurt, but I understand your motivation, because it was the last competitive football game you ever wanted to play. That's a much different story than, you know, a mid-season non-conference game where somebody goes out to play and has a season-ending injury because they were either hiding or nursing some other type of injury, and then they don't play as well as they should, or they have poor form or something like that.
Yeah. So a couple of takeaways I have from all of this. I mean, we talked about in the common mistakes and issues that you see being concussions and shoulder and elbow injuries because of overuse, and also knee issues with ACL and MCL and all this kind of tears. So over-specialization too young being a really big issue, and then not giving yourself the proper amount of time out of your sport, let's say when you're younger, in order to let your body just kind of grow and do its thing, and not create some kind of, you know, recurring issue or stump something that will cause some pain or whatever down the road. And then this last thing, what you're saying is basically, figure out where you're going with your sport. If it's something that's going to be serious, and let's say you are in a situation where you have some injury and you could play, think about whether or not that's going to be something you want to play for a long time, because if it is, it's better to just take that time out. I mean, I had recently on the show Mari Bolle from Norway, and she had something like that happen where she had hurt her, I think it was her knee, and it was jumper's knee, and then tried to keep playing, and then boom, again, the other knee, and then after that, some other issues, and so it just kind of snowballs. So I want people to take away those two things. Don't specialize too young. Get out there, play tons of sports. I mean, you know, when you were doing your thing, and I know you can remember back when I'm skateboarding and mountain biking, and like, I mean,
exactly.
All of those things actually made me so much better at volleyball than not doing them, you know? I remember every time I come back to volleyball after a few months off and I'd done tons of stuff, who knows what, I'd come back and I was actually better right away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, it might have been a blessing for both of us to have such little exposure to boys and men's volleyball until we were in high school.
Yeah.
Because we did so many different things that made us approach it, much differently than we did. One of our best club players actually was a swimmer until his senior year in high school. Mm. And had just incredible athleticism because of swimming that he had developed, and, you know, incredible endurance and all these other things that he was able to translate really effectively into volleyball, and actually went on to play in college.
Yeah.
Even though he only played for 1 year. So
what I actually have that makes me think, What, in your opinion, would be some of the better sports if you were a parent, for instance, or if you're a young athlete and you wanted to kind of do some other things? But just generally speaking, let's say, what are some good sports to get a nice array of, you know, exposure?
So I would say, in terms of complete body fitness, cardiovascular health, muscular health, track and field is by far, you know, running track would be the most effective sport to improve everything else that you do. And I'm sure you remember this from our high school career, but all of the running backs on our football team were essentially required to run track in the off season. You know, that training, as long as you're not overtraining, is extremely, extremely good. I mean, the human body was designed for high intensity, you know, high impact, short duration exercise. And that, so that's exactly what you get from, you know, running the 400 or running the 50 meters or, you know, something like that.
So that would be anaerobic sports.
Yes. Yes. That would be a great thing. And then the other thing to add would be any non-contact sport. You know, and soccer, unfortunately, does not count as a non-contact sport. But typically, basketball is going to be non-contact. Field hockey is supposed to be non-contact. I don't even know if they have that in Europe. You know, individual sports are great. Things like, you know, swimming, tennis, those types of things. Baseball, obviously, is a team sport, but again, it's supposed to be non-contact. You know, lacrosse is not a great idea to play year-round because, at least on the men's side, it's contact, and the women's is becoming more and more aggressive every year, and we're seeing more and more injuries from that. So individual sports are fantastic to look at in the off-season, and that's why, you know, I mentioned swimming is probably one of the better full-body training regimens you could ever go through as well. So, but, you know, with any of those, you just have to be careful about overtraining. And fortunately, we're starting to slowly come to a different mindset in the U.S. That, you know, training three hours at a time, twice a day for, you know, 6 weeks leading up to a season. And then, you know, even in college, we had lifting sessions nearly every morning and then 2 to 3 hours of gym time every evening. In addition to a full class schedule, that's really not healthy. And that doesn't promote enough downtime that your muscles can recover, that your joints can recover from the trauma. You know, in volleyball, we don't have a pitch count. You know, one of the things they learned with pitchers is if you make them pitch too much, they can't anymore. And I certainly remember days in the gym where you would hit 300 balls. I mean, and your arm would feel like it was going to fall off at the end, and yet you had to show up to practice the next morning or whatever it might be. So being very aware, and hopefully any coaches that are listening take heed, but, you know, the NFL is a perfect example of this. Overtraining or being overly competitive, some of the best teams in the NFL don't even make it to the playoffs anymore because they're just riddled with injuries. You know, and some of those are accidental, but some of them are overtraining and fatigue that just lead to very poor form or not being able to protect yourself.
So basically, non-contact, anaerobic, individual sports are a great way to spice it up and make sure that you not only stay healthy in your off season, but that you improve your skills actually, because you improve body awareness, you improve fitness levels. All of these types of things, muscle memory, when you do another sport and you come back to your first sport. And then for all athletes out there, also consider swimming. Cardio, it's low impact. I mean, it's fantastic for nursing injuries also. I know when I was in Indonesia, there are no physical trainers. Like, one of the first people I was thinking about calling was you. It's like, but I've already done that so much that I know a lot of how to take care of myself. Because I've got somebody like you or like Juliet Barnes, who I consider a sister, who's with the USA team soccer. And I can just call up and get this info. But, you know, I nursed my injury in the pool, literally, with just 4 days until I could play with a double sprain. And it's like, that is one of the best ways to keep your body kind of like, let's say, like rubber, you know? You want to think of your body like rubber, not like glass.
So, right, exactly.
Listen, what are some of the best traits you see of healthy athletes? If you're just going to go like super basic, very like cut and dry, what are some of the best traits you see?
So I would say the number one most important thing, and this is something I always struggled with. I was a chemistry major in college and had, you know, occasional hopes of medical school. The number one thing I see slowing people down is not getting enough sleep. And the number two actually is poor or crappy nutrition. In any sport or even in life in general, and I'm still guilty of not getting enough sleep. I mean, I went to bed at 11 o'clock last night and got up at 4:30 to be here this morning. That is a huge, huge time for your body to heal itself, for both your body and your brain to reset. So getting enough sleep is really, really important. And despite what, you know, research might show, yes, over time you might be able to make up some sleep and some recovery, but certainly in season or in the moment, if you're not getting enough sleep, your body is not going to heal adequately. And then you're going right on to the next competition and you haven't given yourself a chance to be as good as you could potentially be if you were getting a solid 8 to 9 hours every single night.
Yeah, that's actually something, I mean, as an athlete, it's a mistake that I've made over my career until now, really, is that I just never properly set up a sleep schedule so that I could stay regular, let's say. And I've noticed that, yeah, sometimes, like I told a player of mine, Melina Terrell, in Denmark this year when she was flying over there, hey, the first day you get there, those first days, you might be able to get out of that plane and just start bombing balls. And after that, you're going to hit a wall. So if you don't make sure that you properly eat and sleep, you're going to screw yourself up long term. And I'm the same way, you know. Sometimes I'll get like 4 hours of sleep, you know, go into a huge match, play the game of my life. And then all of a sudden, you know, a little bit down the road, I have some really poor performances. And it doesn't make, you know, me surprised. So get your sleep and eat well. And so, and speaking of nutrition, because I know this is one of your passionate areas, what are you thinking about the whole diets out there, like paleo and this, you know, blah, 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 these shakes and all that? What's your take on that? And what can people kind of come out of this conversation with some tools, some tips to really turn things around or know they're on the right path?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem that we've run into in the United States is, and I experienced this in college, you know, we would get, I think it was, you know, $5 for, no, I think it was $6 for breakfast when we were traveling, $7 for lunch, and like $8 for dinner. And that essentially is a really good regimen if all you're eating is McDonald's. But heading towards processed foods is a huge mistake. Your body's already trying to deal with all of the inflammation created by exercise. It's trying to repair all those tissues. And then you put something into it that's highly processed or that doesn't have the right building blocks for your body to repair itself. And instead of your body focusing on healing an injury or even just building muscle tissue and building more strength and flexibility, your body's now focused on dealing with whatever the garbage is that you put into it. And it really takes away from things. I've been a practicing physician now for a few years, and I've had folks come into me who've been to, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 other doctors, multiple procedures, multiple medications, and no answers. And then when you actually sit and talk with them, you realize that, you know, McDonald's makes up 2/3 of their diet, or even something as simple as white bread. You know, they have, you know, some processed cereal for breakfast, and they have a sandwich for lunch, and then they have a bunch of processed pasta or hamburger helper for dinner. Mm-hmm. And they're never getting the right types of nutrition for their body.
Hamburger helper out there, for people out there that are listening that don't know it, it's basically one of those foods that's in the middle of your supermarket, like all of pretty much the rest of the processed, crappy, shitty foods that you shouldn't eat. And it's basically one-stop shop, like, hey, here's this great meal in a box.
Right.
So
right. And what I've moved to in my own life is not buying anything that comes in a cardboard box anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a reasonable way to at least start if you're trying to make some dietary changes. I do something that is a cross between maybe a Paleolithic or a primal type diet, a bulletproof diet, which is another book you guys could read to educate yourself. Something again, to not to bring up Tim Ferriss, but you got me started on this, so it's kind of your fault. About a year ago, sending me one of his podcasts, and I've become a big fan of his and his writings, and that led me to, Dave Asprey, who wrote the Bulletproof Diet, and Mark Sisson, who wrote the Primal Blueprint. I really have done more than a couple hundred hours at this point of listening to biochemistry lectures, listening to a lot of these other interviews and podcasts, and come to the conclusion that we really do have it backwards most of the time. Now, I feel probably, I'm willing to say that mentally and physically, although I'm certainly 25 pounds lighter than I was in college, I feel better than I did. And I eat a very high fat, very low carbohydrate diet, and certainly my brain works a lot better than it used to, and I recover very quickly. I was dumb enough to run a half marathon with almost no training, and recovered within a couple of days from it, and I think it's likely because my body wasn't dealing with inflammation from my diet. With problems with the things that I was trying to digest, and it was able to focus on all the overwork that it did that one day.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that the I guess most notable example of this is Dwight Howard now, who was previously with the Magic and then the Lakers, and was one of the more fantastic centers in the NBA. Had a back surgery, and within, I think, a year and a half or 2 years, had to have a second back surgery. And then he never recovered from his second back surgery. And I was listening to Dr. Kate. I can't think of her first name. She's actually at drkate.com, and it's with a C, I think, who is the nutrition consultant for the Lakers, and said that his diet essentially consisted of the amount of sugar that would be equivalent to 20 Hershey's bars a day. And that was the primary staple in his diet, was sugar. And so it took about, 2 months, switching him to a adequate nutrition plan. And all of a sudden he was back. He had healed from his second surgery, and he was back, and he was stronger, and he was in the gym again and playing again. It's something we never think about, but the only thing that you do 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day, besides maybe emptying your bladder, is eat. And so all of that stuff, we don't train 6 times a day. We don't read the right books or meditate 6 times a day. We don't, go to a physical therapist 6 times a day. We eat. And so having the right ingredients and the right nutrition for that is just vitally important to anyone, let alone an athlete who's trying to be at the top of their game.
Yeah, I love that. Some takeaways for people. I mean, you talked about processed foods. Don't get them. Get them out of your diet. I mean, if it's something that's chemical and it's been or processed to the point that it's not even recognizable as a food anymore, it just kind of tastes good because they've scientifically mastered it to be that way, then stay away from it. And you talked a little bit about how you go through your Paleolithic, and what was it mixed with? Your diet?
A bulletproof diet.
Yeah, bulletproof. Which Dave Asprey, this is a great podcast for people out there. I'll put it up in the show notes. But I mean, you definitely have to have a tolerance for coffee if you're gonna do it. But I think most Euros, they do. And I could almost say we do since I live here so often. But
yeah, you've been here so long.
High fat, low carb diet. I mean, this is something that really, we did have it backwards. And I mean, you look at most athletes and when you are eating with your team, for instance, this is the best time to know what they think about what you should eat. And what is that? Normally in the morning, you have your continental breakfast with tons of muffins, croissants, bread, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then sweets. And then for lunch, what do? First plate out is usually bread. Second mm-hmm. thing out is usually some kind of soda. Third thing out is yep. usually like your main course, let's say. But that's a big, huge bowl of pasta. It's like exactly. the biggest bowl of pasta you've ever seen in your life. And I remember I used to down it, and I was trying to be healthy at some point, so I wouldn't do the extra stuff on it. So just give me the pasta, I'll put some olive oil, a little bit of salt, and some pepper. And that was like my way to try to be healthy, you know, because it couldn't get away from it. And then you right. get some little tiny piece of meat. So what yep. you're saying is people should X out the processed food, the sugars. I mean, you look at Dwight Howard, how his body responded now that he didn't have all that chemical and processed crap and sugar in his body. And high fat, low carb tends to tell your body, okay, you have the resources to repair yourself, you know, and operate optimally instead of deficiently, which is led to by sleep or poor eating, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I hope people take some things away from that. Now what I'd like to talk about just a little bit, because I know we're getting into this a little far, and I definitely
I'm making you lengthy today.
Yeah, but it's all right. I mean, this is great stuff. Listen, what in the industry is new out there? I know we talked earlier about people, you know, we talked about the nail and the hammer and all that kind of stuff, the problems they just see, they just go after it. But I want to give people some alternatives. What out there is looking good to you or is very overlooked these days?
So I think one of the least recognized things are regenerative medicine techniques. And essentially those things are prolotherapy, P-R-O-L-O therapy, or PRP therapies, which is platelet-rich plasma injections. We're getting into maybe doing some stem cell research and you know, fat deposition research and things like that, using our own fat cells for stem cell harvesting and doing injections with those things. But any of those theories are essentially just meant to amplify the body's natural tendency to heal itself. And you really have to take away from this the fact that we've been on this earth, depending on what you believe, for either a couple of thousand or a couple of million years. And we've survived up to this point without medicines and surgeries and all these other things, except in their most basic form. You know, certainly acupuncture and herbal remedies and things like that have been around for thousands of years, but they weren't driven by, you know, $1 billion a year pharmaceutical companies, or surgeries weren't driven by $1 billion a year, you know, prosthetic companies and implant companies and things like that. So up until about 50 years ago, if you were having surgery, it was because you were pretty close to dying. And now we see, you know, the number of back surgeries in the United States last year rose 227% from just 2009. You know, I'm not sure where all these terrible backs and terrible genetics are suddenly coming from. But you know, we have to be really, really aware of the fact that the body was made pretty close to perfect to begin with. And that we're the ones that screw it up, you know. So we do things that potentially affect us for the long term. And if we can allow the body to do what it was designed to do, then maybe we don't need the medicines and the surgeries and the shots and all these other types of things. So the newer, and it's actually been around for about 40 years, but it's gained significantly in popularity. You may or may not have seen it, but I guess it's 5 years ago now. Hines Ward tore his MCL right before the Super Bowl. Hines Ward was a Steelers, very famous Steelers receiver. Tore his MCL right before the Super Bowl, and had platelet-rich plasma injections. I guess it was 2.5 or 3 weeks prior to the Super Bowl, and was able to play. Now he wasn't very effective. Because that's not how the body works. You know, you have a major injury, you got to really give it time to heal. It wasn't very effective, but he certainly was still able to stand and walk, which many folks would not have been able to do after a major MCL injury.
Incredible.
Yeah. In my clinic, I try to, whenever possible, use techniques that will amplify the body's own ability to heal itself. As opposed to altering the body's ability or inhibiting the body's ability, which again is something that ibuprofen and Motrin and Aleve and all those things, they actually inhibit natural body processes. So if you need those on a recurrent basis, it's because something else is wrong, not just because you have the disease known as arthritis. It's you have something else going on, and that should be addressed instead of just covering it up. That's really, I hope, where medicine is headed is finding better ways to let the body do what it was designed to do, as opposed to altering the natural processes of the body. So,
yeah, I love that. Amplify your body's natural healing process. Don't alter it. And yeah. This is something I hope people look into this. I'm going to link up in the show notes. Jer, I hope you can give me some links that would be really easy for people to read so that they're not going through a ton of medical jargon that just blows their mind. But
A guy that I did my fellowship with, a really fascinating guy, Jose, has his own website. It's OT, like occupational therapist, otwithmd.com, I believe is what it is. And he's very heavy into the regenerative medicine. And he's also a very weird illustrator, animator. So he has some pretty interesting animations that describe what these processes are and why we use them and things like that. So that would probably be my best website, and I can give you that link when we're off here.
That sounds great. I'll definitely post that up for people. So listen, I mean, we talked about a ton of things here. I mean, we've gone through the mistakes you see people make, whether their parents pushing them into that, or young athletes trying to continue just playing after being injured. And I mean, we've gone into some things that you could do to spice it up, try and play some different sports, get active in some different areas. And I know you talked a little bit about the sports that you could play, the individual ones and swimming and things like that. But I'm going to go out there and say, try some other sports. I mean, try the outdoor sports, try the extreme sports, as long as it's not something that, you could literally break your neck doing. Try on a small scale some things that improve your coordination, like skiing, snowboarding, skateboarding, and your balance, because these are huge things. And another idea is pick whatever sport you're playing, and if it's possible, like a ball sport or something like that, or a floor sport like gymnastics, et cetera, try and do it in the sand. This is another great way to manipulate, your situation in your real sport to a situation where your body has to get very prepared for anything that could happen. So, I mean, we went over some things about eating, and I definitely wanted to throw in there, when you said high fat, low carb, give people just a couple examples of good fats and then the bad fats.
Yeah. So the fats we want to avoid is a good one to start with. Any trans fat. So trans fat is something that is chemically produced. It is not natural. You don't find those in nature. And that was added to foods in order to make them either taste better or stick together better or look prettier or whatever it might be. So those are something we want to avoid at all costs. Those have been reproduced in a number of studies to cause a bunch of negative effects on the body, and can even lead to things like heart disease and clogged arteries and things. Good fats are saturated fats from the appropriate sources, because we do talk about staying away from saturated fats, but saturated fats from the appropriate sources And then unsaturated fats, monounsaturated fats particularly. Those sources, so in my life, those sources are something like Kerrygold butter. I don't know if you guys can find that there, but any butter that comes from grass-fed beef or at least from free-range sources. So, and the same thing with eggs. That's another great source of both cholesterol, which is a vital building block to many of the body's natural processes. Don't avoid cholesterol. You just have to be appropriate with it. Cholesterol is actually what makes up the lining around all of our nerves. So if you don't have enough cholesterol, your nerves aren't going to work appropriately. So you don't want to avoid cholesterol entirely.
Cooking oils, what would you say?
So I'm a huge fan, and I've only started using this within the past year, but I'm a huge fan of coconut oil. I use a lot of coconut oil. I'm very heavy on, again, free-range grass-fed butter. I use a lot of that. And then any minimally processed olive oil. Not the stuff
extra
you'd buy.
Extra virgin.
Extra virgin and not the stuff you'd buy in a gallon jug.
High quality, don't go cheap.
right. And again, you spend a lot more money on these things, you end up consuming a lot less. I probably eat, having perfectly maintained my weight, but I probably eat half as much as I used to since I stopped eating processed foods. Yeah. And I never get hungry. I'm not starving myself. I eat a ton of fat. My morning bulletproof coffee has 60 grams of fat in it, which according to our wonderful Food and Drug Administration here in the United States is my entire daily recommendation for fat in my morning coffee. And then I never cut fat off of anything anymore. As long as it's from a good source. Now, if it's from a bad source, so if you get, chicken that's never let out of the cage and it's fed corn its entire life or some type of grain its entire life, that's fat you want to cut off because it'll actually concentrate toxins in the fat there.
Yeah, it concentrates up the food chain.
So, those are some reasonable sources. I think we should eat probably more beef than we actually do, and not McDonald's beef, but like I said, if you can
real
find
grass-fed
beef. If you can't find grass-fed beef, then at least something that is free-range, that is not strictly corn-fed. You can have corn-finished beef, which is nice because then it actually increases the fat content some, but you're not necessarily getting all the negative aspects of having the grains there. So that's another thing to look at. And then fish. And as long as it's wild caught, unfortunately farm raised fish, just as what we've done with other animals is tends to be full of antibiotics, antimicrobials, things that you probably would never give to your worst enemy, are very common in the way that we process those. So wild caught fish is extremely healthy if you get it. From where I live in the Chesapeake Bay, you have to be careful about eating too much mercury because that can potentially negatively affect you. But I think most other parts of the world, that's not as much of a concern. Certainly chicken, as long as it's free-range chicken can be helpful, but I wouldn't overdo it with chicken. And then lamb, pork, with limitations on pork, and making sure it's from an appropriate source.
Great. Well, that's a ton of stuff for people to take. We've gone over so much today. I want to go into this last little bit so we can wrap up. So let's give some people some quick tips. I want you to keep it super short, super simple for these things. But what personal habit do you believe until now has contributed the most to your success in getting where you are today?
Showing up. Showing up, absolutely. Just coming in every day. Coming in and doing whatever it is you think you can do that day. I had countless opportunities from the time I was very, very young over other people, and it was literally just from showing up. And hopefully showing up on time. That's always encouraging. but even in college, some of our better European players could not get to practice on time. And so while I was training and working on footwork and fundamentals, the first 20 minutes of practice, they were running or jumping over chairs or doing some type of punishment. And it's certainly nothing against Euros, but you know, literally showing up and showing up on time provided me with so many opportunities. Getting up every day, getting your butt out of bed, and just getting to be where you're supposed to be. Even if you're not at peak performance, is a whole lot better than not showing up at all. You know, yeah. And it lets others know. It sends others a message that says, I want to be here. I'm interested in what I'm doing. You know, I'm enjoying whatever it is. I want to be here and I want to be part of this situation. Yeah. So that's something that's, you know, your positive response to whatever it is you're supposed to be doing. You know, literally just coming in and showing up to do the things you're supposed to be doing has made an enormous difference in my life versus many other kids that you and I went to high school with.
Two things there I want to point out for people. 100% of nothing equals exactly that. So if you have 10% to give that 10% as hard as you can. It's better than nothing. And then show up, but show up on time. And what I would say is go one step further. I used to be like that. I used to show up right before practice would start and all that kind of stuff. And the times when I made the greatest leaps and the people that I was trying to emulate who were very successful, they were all in the gym way before I was. I mean, we're talking, I would show up 30 minutes early and they were already in the gym. Yep. So be that person that shows up, get ready, get everything done, get out there on the court, start doing movement, start warming up, doing, you know, prehab, whatever. But really great tips there. So listen, what's the best advice until now that you've ever received?
Well, that's really, really broad ranging. I'm going to stick to sports because I think it's simpler. And it comes from Ron Larson, and it's if your fundamentals are good, and it actually goes back to the Larry Bird quote. Larry Bird was a white guy. He could not jump. He had an amazing shot, but his fundamentals were so solid that he could outplay anyone on the court, even if they were way, way more athletic. And it goes, Ron Larson really instilled that in me because I'd never learned fundamentals because I didn't need to. I was athletic enough, I could kind of skirt around that. But you look at all the high-level athletes, and they're either ridiculously athletically talented, but then they don't win championships because that's all they are. Or you have somebody like Michael Jordan, who was so incredibly fundamentally sound. Same with Larry Bird. They were so sound that even if they lacked a little bit of athleticism, which certainly Michael Jordan did not, they made up for it with their fundamentals and they destroyed everyone. You know, I mean, Larry Bird, who by the end of his career could jump, you know, maybe 16 inches off the ground, was still winning 3-point contests. I mean, it's incredible to see what you can do when you have solid fundamentals. And so when something isn't working out the right way, I used to be a hitting coach for high-level girls club team, hitting coach, and it just like private lesson stuff. We would videotape them, and we would play it back and literally go through every single motion of their arm swing, of the way they jumped. You know, the same can be said for sprinters. The same can be said for basketball players, hockey players, whoever it is. You can videotape yourself and go through every single tiny aspect of it and make sure you have the most solid fundamentals, and that will carry you through so much more than being really, really strong or really, really athletic or just very coordinated and talented that way.
So, yeah, something there. I mean, we're about to get right into some things that help people like apps and learning tools, but UberSense, if you're out there and you want to do this alone, you don't have like a coach that can do it for you, download the app UberSense on your iPad, your tablet, your iPhone, whatever. And what it allows you to do is you can take video, for instance, of a professional, someone with excellent technique, And then you can overlay, you can record at the same, it makes it super simple for anybody, trust me, a 14-year-old could do this, probably better than a 40-year-old.
Yeah, but, probably better than us.
You basically can see yourself doing the exact same thing, and it slows it down, it matches it all up. So I really recommend that. Thanks for that tip, Jer. I mean, video definitely, fundamentals is where it's at. It gets you so far. So don't focus on the outcome, focus on the process. Again, this is something that Ron Larson and Hugh McCutcheon imprinted into me, is be process-oriented, not result-oriented. So great tips there. What's your morning ritual? Really quick, just go through, I mean, super fast from the time you wake up until you leave for work.
I'll tell you, prior to changing my diet, my morning ritual used to consist of sitting on the bedside and stretching my neck and my shoulder for about 5 or 6 minutes, because I've had neck pain since a really bad car accident. Since I changed my diet, my neck pain has disappeared, which is fantastic. So now I don't have to sit there for 5 minutes. But I actually get out of bed very slowly. I wake up reasonably quickly, sit on the bedside, and actually kind of just check everything to make sure it doesn't hurt, make sure it's working appropriately, warm my feet up before I hop out of bed. And the first thing I do is I go and take a freezing cold shower. And it shocks you into reality, and it's fantastic. It really gets the day going. It took me about 2 weeks to really get used to that. And now I love it. It's, I only stay in there probably a minute, maybe two at most. But it's just one of those really like liberating feelings, like doing a polar plunge type thing. And then I get ready, I get ready for work and in the mornings now I have bulletproof coffee every morning. And then I go to work, and I try and be at work at least, half an hour early, like you said, to prepare for everything. Just get ready for your day so that you're not always feeling like you're running behind or rushed or something like that. And that's really it. I leave so early, I don't have to worry about the kids or my wife being away. And I find that very peaceful. That's sort of like my meditation time. Because I don't formally meditate, but that's kind of my quiet time where I'm just inside my head doing my daily routine and thinking about, mostly just peaceful thoughts.
And name one learning source that you love to use.
So medically speaking, I really like Medscape, Medscape, medscape.com. So if you have, simple, not high-level medical questions, certainly listeners can go there and find some useful information. I also like weird kind of cutting-edge stuff, so I do follow Tim Ferriss's blog and Dave Asprey, for kind of techie-type stuff. I put one
in
my...
Is it the Mind Body Green?
Yeah, that's the other one. That's kind of like the hippie kind of thing. That makes me be much more insightful to my own situation. So that one is like, 7 things you could do to make yourself a better person, or 5 ways that you could change your outlook on life, or and then it's got yoga poses and all this other stuff. But those kind of help me. That's more of an indulgence to help me be more introspective and really evaluate myself more in terms of my relationship with other people and the rest of the world. So that's another good one for me.
Love that. Name one app that you can't live without.
Or
tool.
That was a tough one for me, because I try and stay away from my phone as much as I can. I think technology is sort of ruining our lives. So I do really like the Headspace app, even though I haven't been able to complete the 10-day challenge, which is pathetic that I can't find 10 days in a row to meditate. But that's more of a very quick meditation app. So that was a good one for me, was Headspace. And then Epocrates is one that I use constantly at work, and that's a general medical knowledge and drug website. So that's another resource, people. And that's free. You can download that for free if you have questions about medications, or even for your other family members, if you're concerned about the interactions between medications. Epocrates is a good app for that.
All right, we'll definitely link all that stuff up. So listen, I mean, that's a ton of stuff for people. Now what I want to do is I want to wrap up. I want to go through what your most proudest moment was and what you're most grateful for today before we wrap up with a way for people to contact you and follow what's going on at your practice and your definition of being beyond athletic. So
I would say my proudest moment is finishing medical school. And it was partially because you were there, which completely caught me off guard. But that was the culmination of just, you know, really 8 intense years of hard work. 4 in college and then another 4 in medical school, where you work so hard you don't even realize that you're working hard anymore, and it just becomes natural to do, 100 hours a week of you working in a hospital and studying and, trying to be sort of a human being outside of those things. That was above and beyond the most impressive accomplishment of my career so far. What was your second
question? What are you most grateful for?
Slightly cliche, but for my wife. Had I not met her in college, I certainly would have pursued a professional volleyball career, which would have been amazing. That's certainly not a negative thing. But it wouldn't have taken me to where I am today, and I really like where I am today. And so I'm certainly the most grateful for her motivating me to do something besides, to look beyond my college volleyball career and to what I would do in the future.
Yeah, I'm grateful for her also. I mean, you guys are a lovely, inspirational couple. And I just remember when she came home to Chicago, to Evanston, to the house. And I just remember telling you, like, dude, if you do not grab this girl, somebody else is going to do it really fast. Do it.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I want to just say, for a second here, I mean, it was really easy to talk to you, and I know that we went over, and this is going to be longer than people are used to listening, but it's packed with so much info that they've never gotten before, so hope they get a ton out of it. And I just want to say I'm really grateful for you, and I want to acknowledge you, because you're on this show because you are the perfect example of how to be hardworking, how to be a husband, a father, a best friend, a brother. You've done so much. It's so inspirational. And one of the reasons why I'm even on this path in life that I'm on is because of you. And actually, one of the great inspirations for this podcast about giving back, because you're just so selfless as a human, was you. So thank you so much for that. And I want to just give you a chance to let people know how to connect with you. And then you're going to give your definition of being beyond athletic and some parting pieces of wisdom, and we'll wrap up, okay?
Yeah, so the best way to get in touch with me certainly would be email. And my work email I'd probably check the most is jhoff, J-H-O-F-F, at HROSM.com. And our work website, which is still being updated, but is functional at least, is HROSM.com, is Hampton Roads Orthopedic Sports Medicine. So that would be the best way to get in touch with me. I'm rarely on Facebook. That's my wife's domain. The other thing you also mentioned was what your definition of beyond athletic.
Yeah, what is your definition?
So I would have to say that it's planning for today at the same time that you're planning for the next 5 years, and making sure that you have short and long-term goals. From my own life, I actually lacked long-term goals until right before I needed them, which included college. I was lucky to get a volleyball scholarship because I hadn't really planned to do anything else. And I was lucky to get into medical school because I hadn't really planned to do anything else. And so having short-term goals for today, tomorrow, next week, and then long-term goals for, hey, this is maybe where I want to be in 5 years, I think is the only way to truly go beyond just being a great athlete, just kicking somebody's butt today, but continuing to do it for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years and being ahead of all your competition. And that's just planning.
Fantastic. I love that. Goals, planning, it's so important. And that's such a big part of why I have this podcast, is that, look forward. Where do you want to be in 5, 10 years, not only in your sport, but in life? and do something about it to get there. So thanks so much, Jeremy, for coming on. I know this went way over. I'm so appreciative. And any parting pieces of wisdom for people?
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest ones are, you know, introspection. You know, make sure you know how you feel and make sure you know how other people feel about you. And if you don't like it, change it and get enough sleep.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much. Have a great one.
All right, buddy. I really appreciate it. Great to talk to you.
Did you like the show? Leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher.com so others will find us, and share the love. Think of one person that could benefit and send them the link for this episode. For more resources and tips, go to beyondathletic.com or tweet us at @beyondathletic. I appreciate and thank you for listening.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.